There's nothing like a film to give a new lease of life to a novel. At my local library the other day, I tried to borrow a copy of John Marsden's teen fiction story, Tomorrow When the War Began. But even though the library held six copies of the book, there were 20 reserves ahead of me on the waiting list. That's pretty extraordinary for a novel first published in 1993, even such an enduringly popular title as Tomorrow. And I surmise that there's renewed interest in the novel because it is now, as they say, a major motion picture. The film version of Tomorrow When the War Began was released in cinemas during the September school holidays. And as a tie-in, Pan Macmillan have republished the novel and its numerous sequels with new cover designs made up of stills from the film. Any author would be happy to have their novel back at the front of the bookstore. But the translation from page to screen inevitably involves some compromise, and that can sometimes be less comfortable. John Marsden is not only a writer who's sold 2.5 million books in Australia alone, he's also a devoted teacher who now runs his own school, established in 2006. And John Marsden joins me from his school, Candlebark, which is just north of Melbourne. John Marsden, welcome to the book show.
Good day, Peter.
What was it like seeing your novel on the screen?
Oh, goosebumpy. I kind of sat there just tingling all over from the opening credits to the closing credits and just, I think, worried all the time that there would be some awful moment or dreadful scene or some just horrible mishmash which would leave me feeling gutted. Luckily, I didn't get that sensation, so that was a good outcome.
Well, for those who haven't read the book or seen the film, I'll just remind listeners that it's about a kind of ragtag bunch of country teenagers who go on a camping trip to a hidden valley, and they return several days later and find that in their absence, Australia has been invaded, and they're reluctantly cast into the role of guerrilla fighters resisting this occupying army. So it's a pretty exciting story, and it makes for an action-packed film. Do you think the film is true to the novel?
Yeah, I think it is. It's kind of a lose-lose situation, I think, though, often for a movie director. I remember when Harry Potter came out, the director was terribly anxious that he'd be true to the novel because he knew that he'd be lynched by the fans if he wasn't. But then he got criticised for not being sort of imaginative enough and just taking the novel and putting it straight on the screen without doing anything, adding his own kind of flavour or style to it. So it is a hard job to take on, and but I was really happy with it. They left out the major subplot, which was fine and I thought was probably inevitable because there's the whole time factor with movies where the thing runs for 100 minutes or 120 at best, and obviously there's a limit to what you can pack in.
Yeah, we might come back to that subplot in a moment because I thought that was interesting too, that it disappeared, but I could see how difficult it would be to keep it in there. But there are some significant differences in the novel, at least I thought there were. For example, in the novel, you're at some pains, I think, to point out that the occupying army treats its prisoners tolerably well. You know, I mean, it's obviously they're locked up and held behind, you know, wire fences and all the rest of it. But in the movie, there's one scene in particular where a protesting prisoner is, you know, executed with a pistol shot to the head. That was much more graphic, I suppose, than I had remembered from the novel.
Yeah, I agree. And I found that really disturbing in the movie. And I actually got my kids to cover their eyes when that scene came along. Well, I didn't really literally do that, but I warned them there's a really ugly moment coming up. So, you know, look away if you feel that would be too much for you. I would assume that was done so that the enemy would be demonised and therefore the actions that the teenagers take subsequent to that are justified morally more so than they might be if the invaders were pretty benign. And there are certainly graphic scenes in the series of books, but not so much in the first one where the invaders do some pretty ugly stuff. But yeah, I found that pretty troubling to watch. And yet, again, cinematically, it didn't trouble me because I felt that it was understandable or justifiable.
Well, I suppose it does precede a scene in which the kids kill several soldiers in defence, in self-defence, I suppose. But in that sense, do you think that was why it was there, to make the kids' actions appear more reasonable?
Yeah, I mean, the kids are being shot at, so when it gets to that point, you kind of can understand them wanting to defend themselves. But I think it just raises the stakes and escalates things so that you know that you're not dealing with some people who are following the Geneva Convention, that these are people who will stop at nothing, and therefore you're entitled to hit back pretty hard. It's setting it up, I think, for the rest of the movie.
Inevitably, there are changes in the medium from book to film. And the result, in my reading, was that the action becomes more explosive. There are lots of what they call in the industry explodey goodies in the film. The characters are more exaggerated, but the bodies are also more beautiful. Now, in your novel, they're a kind of ragtag bunch, these kids, but in the movie, they're all gorgeous.
Yeah, there's a scene that a friend of mine calls the Baywatch moment early in the movie where the girl's stripping off to her bikini and the boy's transfixed in this beautiful setting with sort of sparkling water, crystal clear water, I should say, shimmering around them and splashing around them. And, yeah, that's a bit, a bit chocolate boxy almost, I suppose. But I don't want to be picky with the movie, and I don't want to, at the same time, I don't want to be an apologist for it. I really think it's a great film. I loved it. I thought it rocks along. There's terrific action. The characterisation, as you say, it's exaggerated, and that bothered me with a couple of the characters. I thought it was getting quite slapstick with one of them. But the audiences that I've seen it with liked it, and it got kind of forgotten as the movie proceeded, so I thought the director got away with it. But, yeah, if I'd had the power of editing the film, I would have toned that down quite substantially.
This is The Book Show on ABC Radio National. I'm speaking to John Marsden about the film version of his novel, Tomorrow When the War Began. And John Marsden, another, I suppose, problematic aspect of the book, in the book, the invaders are never identified by race or nation. But, of course, in a film, you have to have faces. These soldiers have to have faces. And in the film, they become kind of Asian in a pan-Asian sense, not identified to any particular country, but clearly of Asian origin. Does that trouble you?
Of Southeast Asian or East Asian origin, I guess, too.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't say it did. It interested me that so many people who were interested in making a film of the book were really troubled by it, and producers would sit there shaking their heads and say to me, look, you know, we do want to make it, but we do have this big problem. And
I can understand that, because you had quite deliberately in the book never identified who these invaders were.
Yeah, that's true, but my solution would have been to have made them Eurasian and to have found actors, which wouldn't be difficult, who have that kind of indefinable quality to them. But these people who made the film chose a different path, and I thought it was gutsy of them. And, of course, logically, it's far more likely that if we ever were invaded, it would come from that region rather than from North or South America or Europe or Africa. And so it made sense. I think it is. I don't know. I remember watching, I think it was Jewel of the Nile, and the way in which Arabic people were shown in that movie was just foul. They were just so badly, just given such an awful caricaturistic kind of appearance and manner. And I did switch the movie off, thinking this is just too much. So I can understand how racism can be fueled by that kind of thing. I don't think that this movie will have that effect, because the faces are, they're kind of, yeah, as you say, generically East Asian or Southeast Asian, but it's all kept very sort of vague and indefinable.
But there's, in a way, a problem with that too, in that because these characters can never speak, because we can't identify their language, because that would identify their country, therefore they never become individuals. They never become characters in their own right.
Well, it is a classic goodies and baddies story, and that's always the case in those stories, that the baddies, as in the Westerns, for example, were just dressed in black and looked mean and smoked a lot and walked with a swagger down the main street of the town. So it's not unusual for that to happen. In fairy stories, Grimm's fairy stories and so on, the baddies are completely undefined as characters. Mind you, the goodies are too. But, I think the focus here is on the goodies, and in particular for me, writing the book, the focus wasn't really on the war as such. The war was a device, and a very useful device and a very powerful device, but my main interest was in exploring what would happen if modern teenagers were put into a situation that previous generations were very familiar with, where they were challenged to the max, and so whether it was to fight a bushfire or to take over a country from the Aboriginal inhabitants, or whether it was to be in a war against a foreign power, many generations in many countries have challenged their young people, and our young people are unique in some way, or in a number of ways, but one way is that they don't seem to be challenged much at all. And I was curious to know what would happen if they were thrown into that kind of tough scenario.
Well, this comes to your educational philosophy, I guess, and we might come to that in a moment. But, I mean, your novel does fit into a long history of invasion narratives in Australia. I mean, going back to the 19th century, and a portrayal of Australia as somehow at risk, vulnerable to Asia, because we have this vast, sparsely populated continent, and Asia is, you know, a crowded and poor.
Mm. And then it was the Russians in the 19th century. I mean, they built Fort Denison in Sydney Harbour to protect against them. So, yeah, I suppose it's not... I mean, you wouldn't... In the history of most countries, you wouldn't go 50 years, and certainly not 100 years, without finding some serious military threat. It would be very rare for any Western country to have gone 100 years without being invaded. Switzerland would be one of the few, I think. So bringing a Western culture here and implanting it in this country meant that I suppose we brought Western memories with us, and Western histories and Western attitudes. So it's kind of understandable that people would have that fear.
But, I mean, there's a scene in which the main character, Ellie, and her friend Corrie are talking, and they're talking about, you know, their loss of innocence, I suppose, and the fact that, you know, they used to believe in Father Christmas and the Tooth Fairy. And Ellie says, but the biggest fantasy of all was that we believed we were safe. I mean, do you really see, when you wrote the book, did you see Australia as vulnerable to invasion?
Well, I did have a political agenda, which was one of many agendas I had in the book. And it was the awareness that Australians back in 1993 or 92, when I wrote it, were completely oblivious to security, and you could go 12 months without hearing any conversation about our borders or our national security. Then September 11 changed everything, and now we talk about it quite a lot, and we're perhaps overzealous in some areas. But it just did baffle me that there was such a complete oblivious kind of attitude towards the whole thing.
But we did then, and do now, have a much more sophisticated military than most of our near neighbours, for example.
Yeah, I never got down to sort of studying the logistics of it all. I grew up with a diet of World War II literature, amongst others, and a diet of thrillers too, I might add. But The Naked Island by Russell Braddon was a book that I read over and over when I was in early adolescence, and so I had a very strong awareness of the fact that the Japanese army had moved through Southeast Asia and appeared to be on their way to Australia, and that became very much part of my unconscious, my individual unconscious.
As you say now, we are much more concerned about security, and particularly about borders, than we used to. And I know, for example, you've written in a blog post recently about your concern for the way asylum seekers and refugees are regarded in Australia. Do you worry that this novel and the film version of it feeds into those sorts of anxieties around our borders and around asylum seekers?
Well, I don't know. I don't think so. I suppose if people are already convinced of a certain position, then they will use anything to fuel that sense of conviction and their self-assurance, their belief that they're right. So they may quote this or may feel, as they watch this, that they're justified in the positions that they hold. I don't think it would do much more than that.
It might be one of the reasons why it's popular too, though, that there is that deep-seated anxiety.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know how much that contributes to it. I do think, again, that the baddies, quote-unquote, in the film and in the book are quite generic. Someone said to me, oh, they could be aliens, they could be invaders from outer space. And I thought, yeah, they could be when it comes to the book. I didn't particularly like that idea, but it was perfectly legitimate. But yeah, it could feed into a bit of a sense of unease when it comes to our relationship with the rest of Southeast Asia. I would regret that, of course, but it's pretty hard to write a book without touching on something controversial, and so I'm pretty happy with the way that I've handled it in the book and the way that the filmmakers handled it in the film.
Well, as you said earlier, one of the key, I suppose, the idea of the invasion is a device to look at what happens to teenagers. And part of your concern, clearly, and I think this fits into your educational philosophy from what I know of your school, is that teenagers need to be, or young people generally, need to be challenged more and given more opportunities to take risks.
Yeah, I got to teach for 4 years at Timbertop, the Geelong Grammar Campus up in the bush, where the Year 9 students go for a year and basically have no contact with their families during term time. They're only allowed to write letters. They weren't allowed then to make phone calls, and they're probably not allowed now to send text messages. I don't know. But it was extraordinary to see how 200 teenagers who had nothing in common except that they came from wealthy families, but apart from that had a very wide range of cultural backgrounds and other backgrounds, could, by the end of the year, pack their entire provisions on their backs and head off for 6 days in some of the most dangerous country in Australia. And hike vast distances, seeing adults only occasionally during those 6 days, and come back reasonably safe and sound. And I did find that astonishing, and it did change my attitude towards education and towards young people.
Well, John Marsden, thank you for joining us on The Book Show.
Thanks, Peter. It's a pleasure.
John Marsden is the author of Tomorrow When the War Began and its various sequels. I think there are 7 novels in all, followed by the Ellie Chronicles, another 3 novels based on the main character Ellie, so about 10 novels all up. And the school holidays are over, but you may still find the movie version of Tomorrow When the War Began screening in select cinemas around the country. No doubt there'll be a DVD release soon too. And with the film grossing $12 million at the Australian box office so far, it looks like there could also be a sequel. John Marsden is also the founder of the Candlebark School at Romsey, and that's just north of Melbourne.